The fact that quantum is part of the way that the country is seeing its relationships internationally as well as making that industry shows how this is something which isn't just a flash in the pan, but this is enduring.
You're listening to the National Security Podcast, the show that brings you expert analysis, insights, and opinion on the national security challenges facing Australia and the Indo-Pacific. Produced by the ANU National Security College.
Welcome to the National Security Podcast. I'm Rory Medcalf. Today's podcast is being recorded on the lands of the Ngunnawal and Ngambri people, and I pay my respects to their elders past, present and emerging. So our topic today really goes to the heart of Australia's future in a highly competitive international system, and in a system really where technology, where advances in science and technology are radically disrupting life, radically disrupting prosperity, and radically disrupting security as well. And so our topic today, which is really the role of quantum science in Australia's future and the national quantum strategy that was released earlier this year, is something that has deep application to the national interest. Our guests are ideally placed to really lead this conversation, and so it's a real pleasure to welcome to the podcast Dr. Kathy Foley and Professor Michelle Simmons, and I'll say a little more about our guests in a moment. But just to begin, Kathy and Michelle, thank you so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure. Nice to talk to you.
It's great to be here. Thanks very much for having us.
So these are two household names in Australia's science and technology endeavours, but particularly when it comes to quantum. Dr. Foley is Australia's chief scientist, and in that role she provides authoritative and independent science advice on whole-of-government science and technology priorities to really ensure that the best evidence informs government decision-making. Prior to this appointment, Dr. Foley built a long-standing career at Australia's National Science Agency, CSIRO, the CSIRO, as the agency's chief scientist. Professor Michelle Simmons is a Scientia professor, which is the preeminent rank professor at the University of New South Wales in the field of quantum physics. She's also the director of the Centre of Excellence for Quantum Computation and Communication Technology, funded by the Australian Research Council. And many of our listeners will know and will recall that she was the Australian of the Year in 2018 for her extraordinary work and dedication to quantum information science. So, Michelle, I might begin with you, if I may, because I think when a lot of our listeners, policymakers, policy generalists, the national security community, when they hear the word quantum, there's still a little bit of bewilderment as to what this means in practical terms for our national interest. Some of us will recall that a few years ago, I think it was actually Justin Trudeau was one of those rare political leaders who felt that they could, offer a very straightforward explanation of what quantum science is. Not a challenge, I think, that most political leaders would relish having, but what I'd like you to do for our listeners to begin with is just give us a quick snapshot of what is quantum and why does it matter?
Sure. I actually thought he didn't do such a bad job that when I heard his recording, but essentially quantum physics is the way the world behaves at the very smallest length scales. And so, year on year, humans have figured out how to make things smaller and smaller. And the smaller they become, the more dominated by quantum physics they are. Quantum physics behaves more like a wave than a particle. And so there are ways of using quantum states where we can do calculations much faster than we can with classical computing. And so in the quantum computing world, it's being able to do calculations that would otherwise take thousands of years in just minutes. But it can also be used, these quantum states can be used for transmitting information securely, or because they're very small, they're very sensitive to the environment, so they're very good as sensors. So there's basically three areas, computing, communication and sensing, and it's all about controlling the world at the very smallest length scales where quantum physics dominates.
So, Kathy, From an Australian national interest perspective, I know that there's a strategy the government released earlier this year. How, in your view, is Australia positioned to really take advantage in this realm?
Well, Australia is really well placed because it's a little bit unusual for us to have invested for the last 20 plus years in a particular research field when it was starting at the fundamental stage. So we got in on day one, I guess you could say, and invested in multiple centres of excellence, of which you heard Michelle is a leader of one of them. That's actually been the longest enduring one. It's been refunded several times. And the thing that's really important is we've had this sort of patient long-term fundamental science development in the country. We've trained, I think, about 2,500 PhD students. We've got to a point where it's got a level of maturity so that different researchers within our universities are beginning to spin out companies, and Michelle might tell us a bit about the one she's spun out, as well as seeing multinationals coming into the country because they can see we've got capability here that is world-class. So that's why there's a quantum strategy is important, is to help the research sector transition this into something which will be a new industry for Australia that's going to be impactful on pretty nearly every sector. And for all of us, it will make an impact on our lives in time as well.
So, Michelle, your work's been mentioned and lauded in this conversation, but I think, again, for our audience, and it's not only an Australian policy audience but an international audience as well, it just wouldn't be a bad thing if you could just give us a quick snapshot of your own journey, your own work. How did you, if you like, have the vision to be at the leading edge of quantum physics in this country, and indeed with such international stature? How did it begin for you?
Yeah, so to be honest, I started in the UK. I was at the Cavendish, and we were watching quantum computing evolve as a field. And an important paper came out from a researcher that was here in Australia about if you could build a quantum computer, which is the best way to build it. That paper theorized the idea the best way to build it would be to use the silicon material system. And I guess at that time it was quite prophetic because most research in classical computing was done in silicon, but in quantum people were looking at what was going to be the new material. And so they were not actually looking at silicon at all. They thought that industry owned that. So what was fascinating for me was the Australian Research Council set up a Centre of Excellence, which essentially started back in 2000, around actually let's build it in silicon. It was really kind of ambitious. It was a material that nobody was looking at. It seemed the obvious material to build it in, both because of its quality and its manufacturability. And so Australia really got in right at the beginning of that field. And it was at a time when, honestly, a lot of people were still wondering whether the field would grow or not. And because we got in right at the beginning, we basically grew a large number of people working in a very collaborative way through the Australian Research Council Centre of Excellence structure. And then, you know, it just became more and more successful. I think what's critical for Australia is we now hold key patents and know-how in that field. And because we've been in it for the longest time, it's actually creates quite a high barrier to entry for other countries and indeed companies to start in the silicon space. So we have quite an unusual lead in silicon quantum computing to actually manufacture the product here in Australia, to actually build the whole computer here in Australia. And I think that's just hugely exciting. And really the genesis came from, honestly, for me, the collaborative and competitive nature of Australian research.
You know, some observers sometimes wonder where Australia sits in global research rankings, and there's often commentary about the levels of government expenditure or research expenditure, and you know, arguments that we're not performing. But it sounds like in this field we are. I mean, Michelle, how do you feel about Australia's position globally?
Oh, look, I think I've known for a long time that I think the irony is internationally we're incredibly well known. A lot of people know that we're leading this field in silicon primarily, but also in other areas of optical quantum computing. There's lots of companies that are coming out of Australia. I think, you know, the thing that I've seen is the amount of activity for the size of our population in quantum is disproportionately strong. So I think it's roughly 10 times more activity than you would expect for the size of our population. But it's also been going for so long, and in such an ambitious way, such a milestone-driven way, that everybody knows that, you know, in terms of talent, Australia is one of the best places in the world. And in terms of kind of focus in building large teams that are collaborative to be able to, you know, build bigger projects, I think we're very well known for that, to the extent that a lot of other countries are trying to catch it. So, I mean, for me, ironically, the US is now building the equivalents of our centre of excellence is over there. But Australia really got in at the beginning. So it's something where, like I say, internationally, we're incredibly well known for being leaders in this field.
Cathy, in your view, and also in terms of the strategy, where does Australia sit globally? I mean, is there a global hierarchy or ranking of which countries are leaders? How are we doing?
So if you go through looking at our research, we're in the top 5 or 6, depending on what you measure.
Globally.
Globally. So when you think we're 0.3% of the world's population, that's pretty amazing. And we're the 13th biggest economy. So we're really up there. And as Michelle said, sort of 10 times more in the quantum area than you'd expect for a population and a country this size. So that's the first thing. But what's really important with the strategy is that it's allowed us to put forward a pathway, and and you would hear from Minister Husic, who's the Minister for Science and Industry, who's been leading the charge with the government on this, and saying that this is something where it's putting a flag down, saying we're taking this seriously. We want to manufacture quantum systems in Australia. You've heard from Michelle about computing because that's her focus, but we've also got strengths in sensing, and those sensors are here now. And in computing, and in communications, and things such as cybersecurity, which is using quantum key distributions, there are businesses that have taken up and gone internationally using an Australian-based research that's come out of ANU. So we've got a broad range of different technologies that can interact with pretty nearly every area of society and has the potential to have that big impact. So how do we turn those companies which we've got? Some of them are still small and are hoping and ambitious enough to grow so that they can be global leaders in this and see how we can make it into a significant deep tech industry for Australia, which is absolutely critical. And what the strategy's done is showing the first steps. So making sure that we've got the skilled workforce, we're doing the research, that we've got the support in place for our businesses to thrive. And then probably one of the ones which is most interesting too is reflecting on Australia's value system, which is very important for the country, is that we want to make sure that we create an industry that has the ethics and the values that mean that it's a fair and equitable approach. And that's something which is probably only one other country's identified that in their strategy, and that's the UK.
So just to sort of shed a bit more light on this for listeners, if you're looking at some of the, you know, the practical applications that are most important for the national interest, and I'd love to get from each of you maybe a couple of examples, what would those be, whether it's in terms of security or in terms of broader prosperity and societal good? Cathy, what would be your headline applications?
Okay, so I guess the first one is in sensing at the moment, where this is my area of research is in magnetic sensing for mineral exploration. This is where I cut my teeth when I was at CSIRO, and we commercialized a system called LANTEM that's able to see down beneath the surface of the earth down to a kilometer or more and be able to identify and find mineral, in this case, conducting ore bodies like silver, gold, and nickel sulfides, and so that's very important, especially as we're seeing the need for more and more critical minerals to be able to be part of the energy transition to address climate change. So I think mineral exploration is one, and we've seen a number of different sensor systems being developed because you need different approaches depending on what mineral you're looking for, and you can be able to delineate and find things you couldn't find otherwise. Because just by the way, Australia is a pretty tricky country to do mineral exploration in because of the old conducting layer of soil. The red soil that we all know is in the outback is makes it very hard to see through, and that's where quantum sensors can be helpful. So that's one obvious one. And then I guess in the future, I think one of the early applications for quantum technologies or quantum computing. We'll be able to do in a computer the design of new materials which are able to be exact in the way that you do the calculations, because you're doing true quantum calculations as opposed to making approximations which are done with classical computers now. And with that, I'm hoping and expecting that we'll be able to design better catalysts, for example. We need to, again, I think I'll focus on climate change because that's our biggest threat at the moment, and being able to transition to a low emissions economy will require us to use hydrogen energy for from batteries, maybe even design of new photovoltaics that can operate in different light in different light spectrums, so that you could, for example, pick up heat and be able to turn from and the infrared to turn that into solar panels. Panels that pick up EV light and be able to, or electromagnetic light, and be able to use that at nighttime. So that requires you to be able to design new materials, which are tricky. It's very hard to design a new material and then be able to manufacture it. So they're my two top ones.
Michelle?
Gosh, Kathy covered a lot there. So I guess for me, I look at it in the fact that there's roughly 70 different quantum algorithms that are out there, and they tend to come along in the quantum simulation space, which is, as Kathy says, looking at new materials. So in that space, it's looking at renewable energy by looking at different catalysts that allow for production of low CO2 fertilizer, or looking at the energy density storage of batteries. Then I guess there's machine learning. So quantum computing and machine learning are predicted to really give a much greater advancing, being able to find pattern recognition across different systems. That's quite a critical and very topical area at the moment. Then there's optimization problems, which really, I guess, things like the banks and transportation systems are looking. Obviously, with banks, they're looking at their portfolio optimization. With transportations, it's optimizing their networks. In telecommunications companies like Telstra, it's looking at frequency crowding of their signals. So optimization is another kind of critical area. But then I guess the big one that everyone really got into this field was obviously the cryptography. So that's the really big algorithm that would require quite a large-scale quantum computer. But, you know, once somebody gets to that point, it's going to be quite important for national security.
I might just sort of push you a little bit on that point, Michelle, once somebody gets to that point, because there's been a lot of speculation over the years about, you know, at what point will the breakthrough happen for effectively quantum decryption to, you know, effectively break any code, you know, the idea that somehow security systems will suddenly be vulnerable everywhere. I mean, what's your thinking about that question of breakthrough on decryption, or is that the wrong way to think about it?
Look, it was definitely Peter Shor's algorithm was one of the first ones that kicked off the field. I think it's the reason why you get huge investments from countries like the US and China. So obviously it's an algorithm that is, as I said, requires quite a large-scale error-corrected quantum computer. And so, you know, the algorithm itself is so powerful that whoever does have a quantum computer will be able to use it. And so countries are obviously looking at quantum hard cryptographic techniques. But also just, you know, the emphasis on building the quantum computer itself has come from the fact that it is such a powerful machine to have. So where we stand right now, nobody has a machine that can do that. But obviously, as the computers themselves become error corrected and get higher and higher quality, then that's going to be something that we have to think about in the long term.
And this is a competition internationally. This is not necessarily, and please correct me if I'm misrepresenting this, but it sounds to me that this is one field where open collaboration with research partners, no matter where they come from, is going to be problematic. This is one area where there is intense competition between nations. Is that correct?
Well, so I think partly there is that, but obviously Australia's got very strong networks and collaborations with the US, with the UK. So there are strong collaborations that have occurred with those countries for several decades. And so, for example, we are funded by the US Army Research Office and have been for more than 20 years. And I guess partly, you know, setting up the company that we've got, Silicon Quantum Computing, partly why we have the government as a shareholder is to make sure the government's fully aware of the long-term technological implications of that technology.
And I would note, of course, that quantum is one of the critical technologies identified in AUKUS, in the Pillar 2 of the AUKUS technology cooperation arrangement. So with good reason, clearly. Look, Kathy, going back to you, it would be interesting to hear a little around the I guess, the other technologies, the enabling technologies, if those exist, you know, the ecosystem in which quantum science is actually going to be more and more effective for the national interest. This is not occurring in a vacuum, right?
No, it's not. So, of course, you have to have the whole supply chain that goes with it. It's not like you have a quantum system without having all the other things that go with it. From in many applications, there's cryogenics involved. There's also a whole lot of electronics. So the silicon supply chain is going to be really important to make sure they've got all the systems that drive the quantum systems and have them linked into outputs that we can access is just as important. And then, of course, there's the materials. Some aspects of these different devices or different systems are requiring quite, I guess, sophisticated and highly pure versions of a particular element or compound. And so that means that you've got to make sure you've got the ability to get access to that. And in some of the places where we can find them being developed, because they're usually that awkward situation where you don't need huge volumes, but you've got to have a lot of skill to be able to do that, the purification of the material. And quite often it's countries like China, Russia, and some of the European countries that are actually the experts. Japan also and Korea do have some materials that we are using in quantum systems. But that's one of the tricky bits, is making sure that the supply chains are there for the materials to be able to make these different quantum systems.
And do you think that both in terms of that, you know, that ecosystem around quantum, but also in investing resources in quantum science research and applications, do you think that Australia has effectively the political will now to show sustained commitment in this direction?
I think there is a really strong bipartisan engagement with quantum. You would have seen that the previous government had identified quantum as important and started the process going, and then the current government has really run with it and delivered the strategy, plus also a number of different policy settings that are being rolled out now, like a Quantum Growth Centre, Quantum Challenge or Critical Technology Challenge program. The next National Reconstruction Fund has identified $1 billion of that for critical technologies, of which quantum is one of them, as you mentioned. But it's also one where the quantum community in Australia is very well placed to be successful in that if they've got good offerings. So, and I guess the other is also the connections internationally. Quantum's being written into AUKUS and Quad, which are two important global relationships with different countries in order for security purposes. And so the fact that quantum is part of the way that the country is seeing its relationships internationally, as well as making that industry, shows how this is something which isn't just a flash in the pan, but this is enduring.
We'll be right back.
In this disrupted world, Australia needs security professionals more than ever. Join the next generation studying at the ANU National Security College. Our programs uniquely fuse academic knowledge with practitioner experience and fit around your lifestyle with study offered online and on campus. Follow the link in the show notes for more information about programs and scholarships. The ANU National Security College. Engaging minds for a secure Australia.
And I can't resist the opportunity to just give a small plug to some work that we're doing at the National Security College. We are the Australian convener of what's called the Quad Tech Network. So, in fact, very shortly, I think in September 2023, we'll be hosting a conference where a number of ideas papers will be released, including, I believe, on quantum. So thanks for reminding me that the Quad is part of this international network as well. But, Michelle, I'll go back to you, if I may, just to ask you perhaps what's missing. I mean, in a sense, there is this pretty healthy bipartisanship, this relatively strong political will at the moment, and the recent national strategy underscored that. But obviously, we can't stand still. What would you like to see in terms of really whole of nation investment going forward, whether it's from government, whether it's from the private sector, or other areas?
I think having a national strategy with that bipartisan support is hugely beneficial to the quantum community that's out there. So I think they're incredibly grateful for all the work that's gone into that. I think if you look forwards, one of the things I think the quantum community always talks about, and it's something we live so we see, we're traveling globally all the time, is the speed of which the other nations are getting results and investing. I think that's something we always, you know, feel in the pit of our stomach when we visit. You know, we just got to keep moving. So we constantly pass that back to government. That's quite kind of critical for us. But I think at another level, we're quite lucky in that we do have governments, industry and universities co-investing in companies. That's something that's quite unique, I think, to Australia. I'm seeing other countries starting to do that. And some people will say we've always done that. But Australia really has quite a competitive advantage in getting those three sectors together and leveraging each other. That's something I think we're pretty excited about in the strategy as well. I think that message has been heard. But I think probably something that for me is also quite critical in this is the culture, that sense, can Australia actually compete at a global stage? There's always been this view, certainly when it comes to manufacturing, that we're distant from our markets and that, you know, it's difficult for us to make, you know, low volume products. But I think in the quantum space, we've got to remember these are highly specialized products. They're manufactured in low volumes. They require skilled workforces, which is something Australia has in abundance. So, and now with quantum in particular, a lot of it is accessible via the cloud. And so we're really eliminating that tyranny of distance. And we're just honestly in a fantastic position with the workforce we've got, with the backing of the government through these strategies. And, you know, and from the investment we've had for 20 years. So we're in a very positive situation. I think that's the kind of the key message that I would want to get for everyday Australians, to be honest.
So, I mean, that's pretty heartening, if you like, to say that we've got momentum, but we need to effectively maintain it and perhaps share it across a broader part of the community. I'm going to ask each of you, perhaps as we move towards the end of the conversation, I hope a slightly thorny question on the future of quantum, which really is on the question of ethics and ethical implications, and perhaps what are the principles that need to be in place to ensure that Australia's a world leader in the ethical dimension and ensuring that the societal impact of quantum really is to the public good. So I'll go first to you on that, Kathy. What's your sense?
So the first thing is that there's about 22, 23 countries that have really got a serious quantum effort going on across the country. There's how many countries in the world? About 180 something. So that means that there are many countries that are not going to have quantum capabilities. And if you think that a survey that was done by the UK last year sometimes said that it was a survey of industry in the UK. They said that 100% of companies thought that quantum would disrupt everything. That and that some just looking that said and another one said that just for about 50% of those companies said that disruption will be here by 2025. So that's not that far away. So whether it's correct or not, it's the thing is that this is going to impact the world as we know it. And there's only some countries that have got the technology or not. So how do we actually make sure that, particularly our position in the Asia Pacific, Southeast Asia Pacific Rim, is one where we interact with our neighbours and make sure we bring them along when they may not have quantum capability. So that's one ethical one. The next one is that at the moment you might have two females here, but that's pretty unusual. The number of women in quantum is quite low. I've seen numbers 5% and 15% or somewhere in between, but it's means that just the, I guess, those who are working in quantum and have that know-how is limited to not equally divided across genders. And then I guess there's the other thing relating to the uses of it, and this is what we're seeing at the moment with the work that's being done by the government on generative AI and trying to work through in collaboration with the community to say what are the guardrails we need to put in place. We'll be able to do calculations very quickly now, bringing together, when we get full error corrected computers, that will allow us to do a computation that previously was difficult and so therefore created a level of security of privacy. But if you're able to, on a much shorter time scale, be able to pull disparate databases together, you'd be able to get information about individuals quite quickly in real time, which can have real positives if we're looking at health. Or we just had a workshop with the Australian Institute of Sport looking at quantum in sport and having real-time information about the physicality of sportsmen sports people might prevent injury or being able to optimize performance. So they're examples of good areas, but you could also get information so that you could have things which really start to lean into privacy issues, such as knowing everything about you spent in a moment, where you are, tracking you and that sort of thing. So they're the sorts of questions we have to understand and as a society make sure we have the social license as we roll this out. And the thing which I think is pretty encouraging is that Australia sees that as something that's very important. We've seen it in the in AI as artificial intelligence as having one of the first ethics roadmaps and strategies, and also the work that's being done at the moment. So it's very consultative, looking at where do we want to have the guardrails up about generative AIs. That's got a potential impact for all of us, as we're seeing. And I imagine quantum will be the same approach.
So this goes to legal and regulatory frameworks, as well as obviously having the right ethical principles in place.
That's correct, yes.
Michelle, what's your sense?
So look, I'll be honest, I come at it from a different angle. I've always sensed the technology itself has the potential to be hugely disruptive. And so, as you know, just as an individual, I've always found that too much for me to hold, which is why we've been briefing government really all the way through and indeed defence, making sure that they're aware of what the technology can do and what kind of timeframes it's likely to come online. I think from my perspective, the technical challenges to producing something that's going to really solve problems that are a benefit for humanity, you know, issues around climate change, but how to optimize the world, how to understand drug design, how it affects the health space. Those are things that are in a kind of forefront as to why a researcher or somebody that's setting up a company is trying to make things better for the world. And so I'm really pushing that technology front, but I'm very conscious of the ethical implications of having a technology that's out there without control. So I think one of the great things about the strategy with Cathy and with the government's approach is they're looking at these in parallel and in a time frame where the technology is being built in the labs. So I see this as something that's very healthy at the moment. For me in the long term, however, you know, I think we've got to be careful we don't over-egg it too much on that and slow down the technological development because it is a race. So at the core of it, I'm really just pushing that forefront of technology and making sure that people are aware of where it's heading and what time frame.
I'm going to close on a note of, I guess, maybe not optimism, but confidence and vision, because both of you have seen and indeed led some extraordinary advances and change already in your careers in this field. But if you're looking now, projecting perhaps 10, 15 years into the future, let's look at the Australia of the 2030s. I'd love to have one or two observations from each of you as what you see as a feasible quantum future for Australia, whether it's a particular application that's in wide use across Australian society or economy or government, or perhaps a consequence that's good for the well-being of Australia and Australia's place in the world. And I'll start with you, Michelle, and conclude with you, Cathy.
Yeah, look, I think it goes back to my earlier comments about, you know, Australia as a leader in this space. I think it's time for us to capture the economic benefits of developing new technologies here onshore, bringing people to our country to grow that specialized workforce and be kind of the center of what would be the next kind of Silicon Valley, for want of a better word. I think Australia is hugely well positioned to be able to do that. I think in terms of the technology itself, we will have machines that will allow us to solve problems that we just simply can't do at the moment. And I see that hitting pretty much every industry sector. So that will supercharge Australian industry and just it will make Australia a very positive place to come. Not that it isn't already, but it's like a future technology hub for the Asia Pacific region and indeed the world. So I think it's very, very positive for Australia.
Cathy.
Well, Michelle said it really well, but it is going to be ubiquitous. So most people won't even realize that quantum is going to be part of their everyday. And they'll be wondering why maybe banking industry is able to do something better or that the trains and buses work better because of logistics, being able to stop traffic snarls because you can run optimization routes much faster, which you can't do currently. We're going to, I think, have the potential to be the real Asia-Pacific a hub for a place where we can create quantum technologies that go out to that region, because we've got the advantage in many ways. We've got space for being able to set up businesses, which some of the competing countries we're trying to, make sure that we're competitive against are running out of space. And this is something that Australia has, as well as the workforce. Because we've had that enduring long-term capability in the research field in quantum, it's meant that we've got the skills, and then we're looking at the VET side, the vocational education and training as well, to say what are the skills that are needed. So it's not just PhDs, but also those who often are more technical. And then we're seeing a real recognition that this is a pathway for good jobs, for people to realize that they can have a business, either they create themselves or be part of a quantum business here in Australia. And we are seeing already other companies coming from overseas setting up in Australia, because they see that we've got a lot of the policy settings and the workforce and the investment here, so that it's, because you need to, an industry isn't just one business, it's a critical mass of the supply chain, the actual businesses in all the different areas that then allow us to be able to be the quantum country that I think we aspire to be.
That was Dr. Kathy Foley, Australia's chief scientist, joined on our program today by Professor Michelle Simmons. It's been a real privilege to hear from you both about Australia's quantum future. Thank you very much for joining us on the National Security Podcast.
Pleasure.
Bye now.